From KXJZ in Sacramento, I'm Jeffrey Callison. One of the legends of American folk is in town today. It's Ramblin' Jack Elliott with his guitar and songs and stories today on Insight. Also today, the Sleep Train Amphitheater in Yuba County hosts many big concerts like Def Leppard and Journey this weekend. But for many people in the Sacramento region, it's a long drive, 50 miles or so if you live in Elk Grove. Why is the amphitheater in open land south of Marysville, and is it a good place for concerts? We'll find out. First, the news. From KXJZ in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, the Sleep Train Amphitheater south of Marysville is a long drive for many Sacramento area concertgoers. Is it worth the trip? First, one of the great names of American folk music plays Sacramento tonight. For well over 50 years, Ramblin' Jack Elliott has worked with, influenced, and hung out with many of the greatest names in popular music, in particular Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan, taking in some of the big names of British pop music in the 60s and a long and varied list. Ramblin' Jack Elliott plays Marilyn's tonight on K Street. He also has a new album out. It's a collection of great old songs called I Stand Alone. He's in our studio with his guitar. Ramblin' Jack Elliott, thank you so much for joining us in Insight.
Well, hey, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
You grew up in Brooklyn, I read, but you left home to become a cowboy. What was it about the cowboy lifestyle that appealed to you?
Well, I didn't even grow up then. I was 15 when I ran away from Brooklyn and all of that city stuff. I'd been going to rodeos and seeing how the cowboys did their thing. It was fascinating to me. And reading books about it, Will James. And then I met some cowboys. The first one I met when I was a freshman in high school, he was riding a horse right past my house.
In Brooklyn?
And I was about to get up, yeah, on Linden Boulevard. He was going from where he'd left the horse overnight in the stable in Prospect Park. He said he rode him all the way from Montana.
Did you believe him?
A couple of years to figure that out, that it was not entirely true. But he said he was entered into bronc riding in Madison Square Garden Rodeo. He was a bronc rider. Yeah, Tiny Westley was his name, and the horse is called Shorty. He was heading for someplace out in Long Island.
Yes.
And I rode my bicycle alongside of him for about 4 miles, interviewed him pretty good, and then back to home and got to school a little late to school.
First day of school. Yeah. Where did you go to join the rodeo?
Well, I didn't plan it that way. We were just going, and I was in Washington, D.C., passing through there in a truck, hitchhiking. Thought I was maybe going to end up in New Orleans because I liked jazz, the old New Orleans jazz. And my one band in particular, the Bunk Johnson Band, was a favorite, and they were from New Orleans. But this truck was going down to North Carolina. And coming through Washington, D.C., I saw a sign advertising this rodeo that was at the U-Line Arena, the J.E. Ranch Rodeo, and I'd read about them in rodeo magazines and things. Very reputable outfit. Maybe the only reputable rodeo company east of the Missouri River. So I went over there and had a look and ended up asking them for a job, and they signed me on.
To do what?
To groom horses in a tent full of horses, 60 of them. I had a string of 6 horses in my string, and they had several other grooms that each one of them was responsible for grooming 6 horses.
And how did that lead you into music?
Well, there was a clown there named Bramer Rogers who sang and played the guitar and the banjo and sang old hillbilly songs and cowboy songs. And he would entertain us rodeo hands in the stands between the afternoon and evening performance. And we'd put a quarter in his hat or whatever we could afford. I was making $2 a day, so didn't have a lot much left over after having breakfast. But
did he teach you, or did you teach yourself?
No, he didn't teach me anything. I just was impressed by him and loved to listen to him. And that was only on a 10-day period there in indoor rodeo in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at the Duquesne Gardens, which has been torn down. So I can't even go back there and see what it looked like.
You said that when you left home, you were really interested in New Orleans and the jazz there.
Yeah.
You didn't play that kind of music. At least that wasn't what you were hearing in the rodeo. Did you say, you know what, this is what I want to do rather than the jazz?
Yeah, I just, when I first time I really took any notice of cowboy music outside of hearing Gene Autry when I was 9, but I wasn't too captivated by that Gene Autry stuff. It was a little bit on the romantic side. A little bit too Hollywood for me. Although I love that song, Back in the Saddle Again. Can I play a little bit of it for
you? Go ahead.
This is Off the Cuff. I'm back in the saddle again, halfway a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum weed. I'm back in the saddle again, riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only law is right. I'm back in the saddle again. And it goes on, you know. And I listened to that for about a year. And Gene Autry had his own radio program, you know. And I must have fantasized about going out west and being on the ranch with Gene and riding horses and stuff. And then about the time I was about 12, I discovered a book by Will James. It was called Lone Cowboy, My Life Story. It was his autobiography. And I read that very carefully. And then I discovered a bunch more books by Will James. I must have read about 20 of them. And got pretty interested in cowboy life. And so then when I was 15, and having just met Tiny Westley on that horse, Shorty, I was ready to go. So I ended up in this rodeo, and then there was that clown, and he played the banjo and the guitar. And when I got home from that rodeo trip, I was gone 3 months on that. I would have liked to stay longer, but I was getting pretty starved out by the food.
Yes. How did you?
So I had like 19 flapjacks for breakfast every morning because I couldn't eat the beans. And there wasn't much else to eat there on the J.E. Ranch, but it was a start.
Started
going rodeos more and hanging out with cowboys. And I met two or three other cowboys that played guitar in a pretty professional manner.
You also met Woody Guthrie. How did you meet Woody Guthrie?
Yeah, I met Woody in 1951. I was playing pretty well by that time. I'd been playing for almost 4 years. I met Woody, Tom Paley, a friend of mine that played excellent guitar.
And you traveled with
me to Woody. Yeah, I traveled with him on and off for 4 years, 1951, 1952, 1953, and 1954.
How did you travel around? Were you hopping trains?
No, I didn't hop any trains. I did hop one train by myself. I wasn't with Woody at the time. Never wanted to do it again. It's pretty scary.
How do you protect your guitar when you're jumping off?
I didn't jump. I didn't get on or off when it was moving. I got on when it stopped in a railway siding there near a place called Texarkana, Texas.
What was it like spending all those years traveling and playing with Woody Guthrie?
Pretty sparse. We didn't do a lot of traveling. There was an occasional trip, but mostly we weren't on the road a lot. The first year I spent as part of the Guthrie household, I was kind of like a babysitter, and we were playing guitar every day and mandolin and fiddle and listening to records and doing a little bit of tape recording and practice, and we were going to start our own little band.
Yeah.
That didn't get going very well, and it sort of filtered out. After about a year, I think we realized that we weren't going to start a band, but been playing some music together for all that time.
What kind of drove
down to Florida in a Model A Ford that I bought for $25. Ended up giving it to Woody down there. It didn't run very well.
What kind of person was Woody Guthrie behind closed doors?
He was very, very relaxed, but he loved to get in long stories and reminiscing about his adventures in earlier times. And he loved to talk about his days in the Merchant Marine, sailing across the Atlantic in Liberty ships loaded with soldiers and TNT, and being torpedoed by a German U-boat. Got his guitar and mandolin and fiddle into the lifeboat twice. And was playing music while they were floating in the lifeboat with U-boats lurking around below them.
I'd love to hear another song, Jack.
Oh, that's great.
One of your signature songs is San Francisco Bay Blues. Can you play that for
us? I love that one. It was written by Jesse Fuller, the Lone Cat. He was a one-man band. Got the blues from my baby, let me buy the San Francisco Bay. Ocean liner, she gone so far away. Didn't mean to treat us bad. Best gal I ever have had. Said goodbye, like to make me cry. I wanna lay down and die. Haven't got a nickel, ain't got a lousy dime. She don't come back, I think I'm gonna lose my mind. If she ever come back to stay, spend another brand new day walking with my baby down by the San Francisco Bay. Live a while in another city, just about to go insane. Sound like I heard my baby the way she used to call my name. She ever come back to stay, spend another brand new day walking with my baby. Talking with my baby. Riding, gliding, driving, jiving, talking with my baby down by the San Fran, Frisco Bay.
Wow, thank
Something
you.
Something like that. Different
yes.
Every time.
It's Ramblin' Jack Elliott with San Francisco Bay Blues. His
you.
New album is called I Stand Alone. Jack, why is the album called I Stand Alone?
It's because my daughter had an idea for the album. Originally, it was her idea in the first place for me to do an album, which I didn't realize when I was visiting her one day. And she said, Daddy, you have some songs that you don't usually play. Old songs that I never heard. And I thought, well, I guess I do. And I sort of thought back, you know, through the pages of time, and I came up with a couple of songs, and she liked them. And she laughed, and she clapped, and she said, well, that's good. Why don't you do those songs in your show? And I said, they're not for the tourists. I was in a grumpy mood, I guess, and I'm feeling sort of sarcastic. And she laughed again, and she said, that's a good title for the album. I said, what album? That's when I discovered that she had this plan to make an album with her dad. So pretty soon after that, we went in a studio in Hollywood and did about 4 hours of recording and managed to get about 5 or 6 songs recorded. Then we went in another studio a few months later and went in 2 days running, and that was a year ago on my birthday, around August 1st. And in those 3 sessions, what, about 15, 16 hours of recording time, we came up with all of these old tunes.
And some,
some of which I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
That's why they're so short.
Well, I was just going to ask, some of them are really short. Is that the way they actually are?
No, they aren't. They're longer. I just didn't remember all the words to it. But that's all I could come up with that day in the studio, and that's all they had on tape. And it amazed me that the record company would even see fit to release such incomplete material and call it a record. And they did a great job of packaging and a great job of selling, and I'm very impressed with this record company. It's a new company to me, and they got some very good folks on the label, like Tom Waits.
Yes,
he's on there.
We're going to listen to the shortest song that's on the album, and that's My Old Dog and Me. But before we hear it, just tell us where does the song come from?
Well, that I knew. I know less about that song than anything else in the world, but I can tell you that I heard it when I was only about 12 or 13 years old and should not have been in a bar, but it was in a bar in Brooklyn. In fact, I remember my father was very upset with me when I got back a little later. Maybe he smelled beer on my breath. I was such an ugly kid, they never asked me for my ID. They just served me a beer. There was some cowboy band going in this bar in Brooklyn. I never seen a cowboy band in Brooklyn before. He seemed very, very authentic, very Western in his style. And he had, you know, the big hats and everything. And he sang that song. It's the only one I recall. And I memorized one verse of it. Now, I'm sure it's got 2 or 3 verses, but I don't remember the rest of the song. My Old Dog and Me. Me and 2 old bums, 2 jolly old bums, my old dog and me.
Let's hear it from the album. You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. There's more Ramblin' Jack Elliott when we come back. But first, here's My Old Dog and Me, a very short song from his album, I Stand Alone.
My old dog likes his meat. Pork chops are a special treat. My old dog and me. My old dog and me. 2 old bums, 2 jolly old bums. My old dog and me.
Listening to Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. I got started in radio as an intern. Many people in public radio did. To learn more about careers in this great part of broadcast journalism, apply to be an Insight intern. You'll find out how at capradio.org/insight. My guest is the great American folk musician Ramblin' Jack Elliott. He's in Sacramento for a concert tonight at Marilyn's. He also has out a new CD of great old songs called I Stand Alone. Jack, I'm sure you asked this question many, many times, but I have to ask it today because I haven't found a definitive answer, and that's, where did the name Ramblin' come from?
Well, there's 2 people that claim to be the author of that term, Ramblin', and one of them was my friend Bobby Newworth, who saw me singing on the street in Paris on the Boulevard Saint-Germain in front of a cafe. Me and Daryl Adams, we were singing together and passing a hat, busking on the street. And Bobby Newworth saw us there, and he started calling me Ramblin' Jack. And I thought for years that he was the one who invented the title, but I found out later from Odetta, she said her mother was the one who first called me Ramblin' Jack. Oh, I went to visit Odetta at her house a couple of times. She lived right across the street from a man who had Model A Fords. I've always been fond of Model A's. And I had this old 1928 Model A Ford. And was over there to adjust the brakes or something. I cleaned the spark plugs. And I went across to visit Odetta and knocked on the door. I'd been there before. Her mother saw me out the, you know, little window in the door, and she turned to her daughter and she hollered, "Odetta, Ramblin' Jack is here." I don't know what she meant by that.
Does anyone call you Ramblin'?
Yeah, Bob Dylan calls me Ramblin'. Oh. He's one of the few that does, though. Most people call me Jack.
Yeah.
But he likes that term, Ramblin'. I remember went to see Bob about 2 years ago in a concert, and he was seemed to be happy to see me, and he looked at me and said, "There's Ramblin'. What's in your life, Ramblin'?"
What did you say?
I said, "What's in my life?" It was a strange question.
Yes.
But I thought, yeah, okay. I said, I got a new Ford pickup, and it's diesel, and I drove it here from Oklahoma. It took me 4 days, fed the cats, got a little sleep, and here I am. And he laughed. He thought that was very funny, and he said, "Fed the cats. Gotta feed them cats. Gotta feed them cats." I'm still waiting for some Dylanographer to explain what he meant by that to me.
Yeah.
Gotta feed them cats.
Yeah. I'd love to hear you play another song from your album, I Stand Alone, and one of them, Arthritis Blues. You recorded that a long time ago, didn't you?
I think I did. Yes, I did. I don't know what album it was on, though. Yeah. Many albums back.
Where does it come from?
Well, it was written by Butch Hawes, who was Bess Hawes' husband, and Butch had a very painful case of arthritis, and he wrote this very, very telling story about it called the Arthritis Blues. I went to the doctor. The doctor looked sad. Well, he looked in his book and he told me what I had, and it's all kinds of trouble gonna find you somehow. Arthritis is a thing to miss. It'll leave you walking with a double twist, and it's all kinds of trouble gonna find you somehow. You can't stand up and you can't lay down. You can't sit in a chair. You can't roll on the ground, and it's all trouble gonna find you somehow. You can chase it away with your sweet apple jack. You wake up in the morning and it's squatting on your back, and it's all kinds of trouble gonna find you somehow. Gin, rum, and whiskey will ease the pain. You wake up in the morning and it's right back again, and it's all kinds of trouble gonna find you somehow. Doctor, 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 get your X-ray machine. Well, it feels so good, just about like morphine, and it's all kinds of trouble gonna find you somehow. If I live to be 43, you'll find me running like a Model T, and it's all kinds of trouble gonna find you somehow. And if you
get to heaven, tell the judge for me I've had 16 years of a third degree, and it's all kinds of trouble. Gonna find you somehow. Arthritis is a thing to miss. It'll leave you walking with a double twist, and it's all kinds of trouble. Gonna find you somehow.
Wonderful Arthritis Blues, played live in our studio by our guest Ramblin' Jack Elliott. It's also on his album, I Stand Alone. Jack, we talked earlier about some other musicians you've played with, Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan, but you're still playing with other musicians, and I noticed on I Stand Alone quite a few other well-known collaborators, including Flea, who's the bassist in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. How did that come about?
Once again, it was done but with mirrors and microphones down in L.A. They never even told me about that. The record company did that. But they're geniuses down there. They really have a good slant on how to make things sound better and look better. And I'm glad to see them put out such a nice album.
So you're pleased with how it turned out?
I haven't even met those people.
Really?
I should write them a thank you note, though.
Yeah.
Lucinda Williams is on there.
Yes.
Looking forward to meeting her someday.
What kind of music do you listen to when you're by yourself?
I like to listen to my Ford truck engine run. I don't do enough really listening much because I get tired of being on the road. I've been on the road a lot, played a lot of shows. So I'm not really a music lover. But, you know, if it wasn't for all them music lovers out there, I'd have to get a job. So I'm happy for them. Happy for you.
Of all the songs you've played over the years...
I listen to Kris Kristofferson.
You do?
Yeah. And Guy Clark. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, that's great. What do you like about them?
Remembered. I like their matter-of-factness and their honesty and their plain delivery.
Yeah.
I never cared much for a lot of operatics. That's good for opera. It's necessary. Opera singers have to sing well, and they have to sing right on the note, and they have to give it a lot of wind and power and stand up straight and do their thing. But I'm not an opera singer. I ain't singing opera. I ain't trying to sing opera. I'm not trying to impress anybody with what a pretty voice I have. I'm just trying to get the words out. It's a story. It's an important story. And I don't think it needs a lot of ham acting to get it across. It just needs to be honesty. It's sort of like journalism, more of the, you know, just get the news out to the people.
Are the words more important than the music?
Yeah, I think they are in a lot of folk music. Music is good, too. It's soothing, or it can be soothing if it's played right. I don't hear a lot of soothing music lately, though. Maybe that's why I don't listen to radio as much as I should. But there's music. There's good music out there.
What's a little
hard to find, though.
Yeah. What's your favorite song to sing?
Oh, I love singing the San Francisco Bay Blues. I get a big kick out of that every time. Never get tired of it. For instance, there was a wonderful song called The Tennessee Stud, and I loved it enough to want to learn it and had a lot of words, recorded it, did a very good record of it. It was very popular, got a lot of requests for it, and for about 4 years I sang it repeatedly, but people kept asking for it. Tennessee Stud, Tennessee Stud. And it got to where I couldn't do it anymore. I just wore it out, got tired of it, like an old pair of jeans. Got full of holes. Got to be where I couldn't pronounce the words. I'd get lockjaw. Too many syllables. Can't do it. So people ask for that song. I say, well, it's on the record. You can buy the record. You can hear it.
Jack, we just have a few minutes left. Is there something else you could play for us that's not too long? Just a couple of minutes?
Well, let's see. What else is there? Played most of my favorite songs. There might have been another one.
What about Call Me a Dog? How long is that?
Oh, good. That's a short one. That's a very short one. I love Call Me a Dog was probably the first one that I came up with to that resulted in the production of this new album, which should have been called Not for the Tourists, but that's so snobbish, I guess. Leaves people out. Hey, I'm a tourist myself, on occasion.
Call me a dog when I'm gone, gone, gone. Call me your dog when I'm gone. When I come home with them $10 bills, it's anywhere you've been so long. Been all over 10 counties, all over Tennessee. Any old place I can hang my hat, well, it's home, sweet home to me. $10 bills, it's honey, where you been so long?
I love the way you sing that. He sounds
just
almost indignant.
Pour it out.
Well, that's Call Me a Dog, performed by Ramblin' Jack Elliott. He's our guest in our studio. It's from his album, I Stand Alone. And you're playing tonight at Maryland's in K Street in Sacramento.
And I've never been there.
Yeah. You play by yourself?
Yeah, I'm playing by, there's an opening act.
Yes.
But I do my thing by myself.
Great.
Pretty much like it says there, I Stand Alone.
Well, I'm sure it'll be a great show. Ramblin' Jack Elliott, it was a real pleasure meeting you. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Pleasure to be here with you. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
You're listening to Insight from KXJZ. Coming up, why is the Sacramento region's main amphitheater 40 miles from downtown, and is it worth the drive? We'll take a look at the Sleep Train Amphitheater when we return. Listening to Insight from KXJZ. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Tomorrow in Insight, a local playwright talks about the challenges of creating sustainable black theater in the Sacramento area. And later this week, what impact do people who only own cell phones have on political surveys? Many of Sacramento's biggest summer concerts are at the Sleep Train Amphitheater. Already come and gone are artists as varied as Snoop Dogg, Kelly Clarkson, and Santana. Still to come, Tool, Toby Keith, and John Mayer. This weekend, Def Leppard and Journey will revisit their 80s glory days. The only thing is, for many Sacramentans, the amphitheater is a long way away. From downtown, it's about 40 miles. Obviously more than that if you live in, say, Elk Grove or Davis. And much of the drive is not by freeway, whether you take Highways 99 or 65. Why is the Sleep Train Amphitheater in open land south of Marysville, and is it worth the drive? Let's start with a local concert goer. She's Erica Taylor, and she's been to many concerts at the amphitheater and other local venues since moving to Sacramento in 2004. She works at Capital Public Radio as Community Relations Coordinator. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you've gone to concerts all over the place, and you used to come to Sacramento when you lived up in Redding when you were younger, too. So you've been coming here many times.
Absolutely.
How does Sleep Train compare to other regional venues?
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a very similar experience to other places that I've been to.
And let's see. I guess the most obvious comparison might be with Shoreline in Mountain View. Have you
been
there?
Absolutely. I have. I joke with my friends that The Sleep Train is just like Shoreline, except with many more women's bathrooms, and that's good.
Yes. And what about other venues in the Sacramento area? Have you been to them, too? And how would you compare them to seeing a concert at Sleep Train?
I have been to a couple of places in the Sacramento area. The Sac Memorial, you know, the good old Radisson. There's something to be said for seeing a concert outdoors. I think that's fun. Of course, if it's 115 or pouring down rain, it's good to be inside. But I think the Sleep Train is wonderful.
Okay. And what would you say is the best concert you've seen at the Sleep Train Amphitheater?
It would probably have to be one of the times that I saw the Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah. Okay. Also with us in our studio is Chris Macias, who's the Sacramento Bee pop music critic. He's been on Insight before. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
What do you think of the Sleep Train Amphitheater? Is it a good place for big concerts?
I think it is a good place to see big concerts. As a venue itself, it's pretty much about as modern as you can get right now. But the quibble that people have with it is just hard to get there. But once you're there, the sound is good, the sight lines are very good, and they do have enough big names coming through to want to, you know, people want to go out there. But then again, it's a little bit of a haul to get through the pastoral Yuba County roads to get to the amphitheater.
When you say modern, what does it have that some of the older venues don't have?
Well, like our
Erica mentioned, the women's bathrooms.
Bathrooms, and they raised the stage a couple feet from what they have at the Shoreline, because I think the Shoreline was built in the early 1980s. And so when I was reporting on this, the Sleep Train Amphitheater opening up, they were talking about how they were trying to improve upon some of the things that had been going at the Shoreline, such as they knew that they needed more restrooms. They knew they needed better sight lines. And so, you know, some of those improvements that they've, you know, tried to give the Sleep Train Amphitheater. And it's a good venue. I mean, I don't have any qualms with it as far as the venue itself. But, you know, like I said, it is a little bit of a haul out there. And it's it would be nice if it was closer to town, shall we say.
Erica, do you jump around in the mosh pit? Do you dance? I mean, what's the amphitheater like for that? If you do such things, or maybe you drink wine in the lawn.
Well, I am usually in the lawn, except for the rare occasion that we spring for some good seats to get up close. But the lawn is a good time because you can kind of dance around and you have your own little picnic-like area. And when the sun goes down, that's when I dance around when people can't see us. But it's fun. It's good times.
Yeah. Well, Chris, let's talk just a little bit about what came before the Sleep Train Amphitheater, which was much more conveniently located than south of Marysville, and that was the Cal Expo Amphitheater. Did you ever go there?
Oh, yeah. I saw some of my first concerts out there, actually. I remember Billy Idol about 1983, Rebel Yell Tour. So yes. I was there as a young'un, but yeah, I went to many concerts there over the years. And then I believe it shut down in 1998.
Yes. What was wrong with it?
Nothing really. The neighbors thought that there was a lot wrong with it, namely noise and parking, because, you know, it's just a lot of, when you have, you know, 10 to 15,000 extra visitors coming through your neighborhood at any given time, and they like to play the music really loud, then you can end up with some problems. There are a lot of good shows out there, but, you know, it's not the same kind of design as some of the more modern amphitheaters, such as the Shoreline or the Sleep Train. But as a venue itself, you know, it was much more centrally located. They were able to bring lots of, you know, A-list performers through town. And I think a lot of people liked it for that reason, because it was so centrally located and not too tough to get in and out of the venue as well.
Yeah, because it's set up for Cal Expo. Mm-hmm. I saw one concert there back in 96, and that was Alanis Morissette. And I was surprised. It was such a funky-looking place. I mean, it looked like a state fairground.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it's just kind of
surprisingly.
Like this, yeah, it's just like this flat sort of general admission area, and there's kind of like bleachers on the sides. But, you know, these outdoor amphitheaters, I mean, they're fun, you know, for the outdoor kind of concert experience, but, you know, it's not always the most ideal place to go for, like, a good sonic experience. You know, the wind can kind of carry the sound away. And unless you're, you know, within the first, like, you know, half of the grounds or something, if you're too far back, you know, you do feel a little removed from what's going on. And like I say at the Sleep Train Amphitheater, if you're up on the big lawn area, you're basically paying to watch a video screen. But if you are close enough to the stage, if you are, you know, in the kind of general bowl area, then yeah, you know, it's a pretty good deal.
Eric is nodding at that about the big video screen. You said that oftentimes you're sitting not in the expensive seats.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you're watching just a big video with, yeah?
Sometimes, but it's, you know, it's the experience. It's the vibe of the crowd. And truly, you're only watching the video screen when they're working. I've been there when they haven't worked.
Well, I think people want to come together, too. That's part of it, too. It's just the community experience of going to a concert, being with your fellow-minded Dave Matthews Band nuts and everything else, people dancing around. So, you know, there is something to be said for that. But I don't. For me, I really go to a show, you know, just as a fan for the music. And I really like to get a sense of what's going on stage and really kind of enjoy the interplay and just the energy. And just some of these shows are just feel a little too far removed from the action for my personal taste.
You said that the elements can sometimes be an issue in outdoor venues. Is it your impression that Sleep Train is well designed to insulate it from what might be going on around?
Well, they've definitely taken some good steps out there to have good sound quality. And one of the first things that impressed me about the amphitheater was when those first chords kicked in, the very first show out there was the Stone Temple Pilots Papa Roach show. And like these first guitar chords came roaring out and it sounded really full and clear. And I was really surprised. And they have a speaker system set up. So if you are up on the lawn, there's a little bit of a delay going. So because sometimes like if you're just watching from the top of the hill, there's, you know, and you're watching from the video screen, it seems like there's a delay of what's happening from the stage to what you hear. And so they have a speaker system set up. So it kind of lessens that impact. Not exactly sure how they do it. But, you know, so they have taken steps to try and make it sound as good as possible. But sometimes there's only so much you can do with the elements if it is a windy day, or sometimes people just get sluggish because it's hot out there and there's really no shade.
Erica, what's the difference as a concert goer between sitting at the back at Sleep Train and sitting maybe in the upper bowl at Arco Arena? Do you get a better sense of being involved in what's going on at one over the other?
Well, I guess it would depend on the type of crowd. Sometimes when you're in those seats, even if you're up in the nosebleed, you're still kind of separated, where at the Sleep Train or a place like that, it's kind of this mass of people and you're literally kind of stepping over your fellow man to try to get to those awesome women's restrooms, and it's more interaction. I don't know.
Yes. On the phone is someone who's played at the Sleep Train. It's Adam Roth. He's a vocalist for the Sacramento-based band Broken Iris, which opened for the Dave Matthews Band at the Sleep Train in 2005. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. How are you guys doing?
Well, I'm doing well. What was it like playing at the amphitheater?
Playing there was one of the best experiences I've ever had. I particularly like the amphitheater over all of the local venues, just for the fact that people do have to kind of go out of their way to go see a show. So they're not just kind of stopping by to go to some venue. They're actually taking time aside and taking the effort to go watch a show. That way, everyone's really involved, you know, and there's no distractions around at all. But back to your questions, playing it was an awesome experience. Everyone treated us very well, and on top of it all, the sound was magnificent. It was the best we've ever sounded.
Now, interestingly, this was your band's first concert.
Yeah, it was actually our very first show.
How did that happen?
Well, we started the band Broken Iris as a project. It was after with the former members from a band called Turning Point, which kind of did as a project to see where it would go. Soon, Quad 106.5 was a local radio station. They put on a contest for us to open up for Dave Matthews, and we went for it. Said, why the heck not?
Yes.
We ended up winning, and it was an awesome experience.
So, since then, you've played in smaller venues?
Yeah, we played like some local venues in the Roseville, Rockland area, and Sacramento area called the Boardwalk or the Underground.
How do you feel, when you think back to playing at the amphitheater, how do you feel connected to the audience at a big venue like that compared to at the Boardwalk?
Well, of course, there's more of a personal connection at the little venues because they're up in your face and whatnot. But when you're playing at the Sleep Train Amphitheater on a big stage like that, I mean, the volume is so high, everyone's paying attention to just you and not any of the distractions around them. It's night and day. I'd rather play a big venue than a small venue any day.
Mm. Chris and Erica, Adam said that one thing he likes about it is the fact that people need to make an effort to get out there.
That's
what do
true.
You think about that? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, when Bill Graham Presents was building this amphitheater, they really did want a place that was more closer to central part of Sacramento. They looked at other places such as Galt and some other outlying areas. Nobody really wanted it. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's just sort of the silver lining here, is that with it being a little farther out, that, yeah, you know, if you're going to, you know, take the time to maybe get off work early, if it's a midweek concert, to go out to the show, that you're going to travel, you know, between 45 minutes and an hour to get out there, yeah, you're really going to want to go and, you know, have a top-notch experience, or at least, you know, try and make a point to, you know, have a good time, or, you know, you have a pretty good vested interest in the show, I think.
Erica, what part of town do you live in?
I live in the downtown area.
And how much time do you allow to get to Sleep Train, and how much time do you allow to get back? You know, basically when you leave your seat to get your car and then to get home.
Goodness, it's really not how much time I allow. I generally am aware that it's going to take us a little while to get out of the parking lot, but it's really not as bad as any other place around.
Yeah. Wasn't there a problem with that at first, though?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the number one complaint that we got when the amphitheater first opened up, was that the traffic was just a nightmare. And that is true, that you go to the Shoreline Amphitheater, you go to ARCO Arena, you go to SBC Park, and anytime you get, 15 to 20,000 people in one parking lot, it's going to be a little bit of a chore to get out. But the sleep train, there's only like pretty much one way in and two ways out, sometimes two ways in, two ways out. I have waited up to an hour and a half to get out of the parking lot before. That's only usually the case with the really big sold-out shows. The place holds 18,500, and if there's a show that only, say, draws 10,000, usually not too bad. But like I said, it's taken me an hour and a half to get out of the Shoreline as well. It's just one of those inconveniences that I think concert-goers know they're going to have to put up with.
Adam Roth, you go to concerts out at Sleep Train?
Yeah. I go there as much as possible. In fact, I'm going to go see Tool coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's my favorite venue to go to. I just like the fact that it is outdoors, and when the lights are dimmed and you're able to go up on the lawn, you're able to go down to your seat, and it's just really casual. You could just sit back and enjoy the music. You don't have to be stranded in one area the whole time.
So if a big band is coming to Sacramento and, they could play either ARCO or Sleep Train, you vote for Sleep Train?
Definitely.
What about Chris and Erica? Say a big band that you like is coming to Sacramento. Are you secretly hoping they're playing at Sleep Train or ARCO? Erica?
I'm going to have to go with Sleep Train as long as it's, summer. It's part of, enjoy that we live in Northern California and that we have sunshine and nice evenings.
I would say in terms of venue, Sleep Train, but in terms of convenience, ARCO. Because ARCO just does not sound good. It's a big multi-purpose room. Echo Arena is what they call it. At least Sleep Train is geared towards sound. They are keeping sound in mind out there and a real concert-going experience. But then again, ARCO just, right outside of downtown.
I realize that if you live in Roseville, say, you're going to take 65 to get out to Sleep Train, and if you live in Davis, you would take 99. Which though is better? Have any of you tried both freeways or both roads and think one is better than the other?
I've only taken 99 to 70.
Yeah, to 70.
Yeah, I've only done that route as well.
Okay, Adam.
I've done 65.
Yeah.
That's all I've done. Going through Lincoln is a little rough because it's a small town and there's only one little street. But once you get past that, it's a pretty soft ride all the way through.
Yeah, I moved to Lincoln not so long ago and I experienced the Kelly Clarkson backup.
And
it was unbelievable. Just complete and utter gridlock in Lincoln. So
those darn American idols.
Yes. Chris, just quickly, isn't the amphitheater owned by Clear Channel or used to be?
Yeah, it's a Live Nation company, which is, it's essentially Bill Graham Presents, which Clear Channel absorbed. Kind of don't even know how to slice it these days. But it's a venue owned and operated by Clear Channel.
Yeah, I thought it was sold off, but there's some directors. It's a strange situation. They've got some shared directors.
Or is it Live Nation now or something?
Live Nation,
yeah,
yes.
But basically, it's a it's run and owned by those people, unlike, say, ARCO.
Yes. Okay. And finally, what kind of concerts are best suited for being at the amphitheater? Adam, what's the ideal concert at Sleep Train?
You know what? Anything can go over there, to tell you the truth. Actually, let me think about it. Ideal? Broken Iris, of course. No. I would say more of the rock kind of genre would be the best.
Okay.
Yeah.
Erica?
I would have to agree.
Yes. Okay. And Chris, what do you think is best at the amphitheater?
Yeah, probably like a show with big rock and guitars. That seems to fit out there well. Or, something where people want to get their groove on just a little bit. Some of the Dave Matthews kind of stuff where, people want to do their hippie twirl. That seems to go well. That's it.
When I saw Lenny Kravitz, that was an awesome show over there.
Yes?
Yeah, he was really good.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, thank you all. Thank you very much to you all. On the phone, Adam Roth, who's a vocalist with the band Broken Iris. They opened for the Dave Matthews Band at the Sleep Train Amphitheater back in 2005. Adam, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And in a studio, Erica Taylor, Sacramento woman, been to many concerts at the Sleep Train and other local venues, and Chris Macias, the Sacramento Bee's pop music critic. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
And that's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up on the KXJZ stations, African lions may be killing and eating more humans than any time in history. That story from South Africa and the day's news next on The World. Insight staff includes technical director Mark Jones, assistant producer Jen Picard, and senior producer Benjamin Jonas Keeling. Thank you for joining us.